Hi, I'm Will Robinson and welcome to the official Crystal Palace podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Stirs, the world's first zero-waste coffee. Stirs are a proud local partner and hot drink supplier to the Eagles, supporting a more sustainable South London. Whether you're at the match or watching from home, try their great-tasting coffee and hot chocolate by visiting shop.cpfc.co.uk. And the best part? A portion of the proceeds goes straight to the Palace for Life Foundation. Supper cuppa to help young South Londoners. Perfect. Now sit back and enjoy the official Crystal Palace podcast.
It's Saturday the 7th of April and it's the Happy Mondays playing at Wembley with Paul Oakenfield DJing. Something that had been tickets bought and planned for ages and friends of us all went and we were very much into that Manchester scene at the time and had an unbelievably big Saturday night. Hey, I'm Carl Davies. I've been a Palace fan since 1975, which was my first game, and a very regular goer since the late 1980s. I'd originally planned to sort of get home at about midnight, but it was home at 4 a.m. With my father waking me up really early on that Sunday morning going, come on, it's Villa Park, it's our day. And I eventually got the last, we are leaving now without you. And I went, go without me. I'm just too much in pieces. I'm too hungover, too tired. And my father said the words of, go on, you'll be missing out, big day. And I went, go on then, I'll sit in the car. So it was, I nearly did miss one of the greatest days in our history.
It's 1990, I was 18 years old. We were by that time going all over the country. It was really the point at which, you know, we were starting to go as much as we could home and away. It was a fantastic kind of period to be following the club. Hi, I'm Jeff Perkins. I am a football coach locally in South East London. I've been following Crystal Palace since 1987. The idea was you'd get a coach from Sellers Park, right? That's what most people were doing if you didn't have a car. Obviously, we didn't really have our own kind of transport. So every coach I remember had a number. And all I can remember was our number was somewhere in the kind of mid-30s. So we all went up to Sellers Park. You would all wait then in the Sainsbury's car park and these coaches would come in and obviously numbers would be announced and obviously these coaches would fill up. And it became apparent as soon as number coach 30-something had left, you looked around and that was it. There was nobody else left in Sainsbury's car park bar 30 or 40 people, and there was certainly no other coaches. So now you're looking around, nobody knows what's going to happen. There's nobody really official to ask at this point. And I'll never forget, right, a guy said, oh, don't worry, lads. He said, don't worry. He said, I've got an idea. I know where there's a coach. You're thinking, right, this is ridiculous. He said, no, don't worry. He said, I know there's a coach. It's somewhere down in Epsom. He said, I'm going to go and get this coach. He said, you stay there. I'm going to go and get this coach, right? This guy then, I'll never forget, gets into a Range Rover, right? It's a really, really nice car. And this is the guy that we're relying upon is going to get our coach. So as soon as he leaves the Sainsbury's car park, all we're thinking is, well, now half an hour, he's straight up the M1, right? He's going to the game. We're going to be left here, right? There's no way he's going to do what he said he's going to do. And true to his word, you know, we didn't have anything else to do. We might as well wait, you know, we might as well hope that this guardian angel comes back. And sure enough, he did. About 35, 40 minutes later, he'd been down to Epsom and he comes back with this coach. So we get in this coach and we try and get ourselves, as you do outside of South London, get onto the M1. And then it becomes apparent that this coach isn't going very fast. So somebody goes down the front of the coach to ask what the problem is, because, you know, we're running late now. Obviously, we were late anyway. The coach has only got three gears. So the coach will only go into third gear. So we're going up the M1 in the slow lane. We're doing 40 miles an hour. I mean, it's now an episode of Only Fools and Horses, right? We're in this big jalopy. We're trying to get up to Villa Park to watch the game. And we were running so late that in those days you would turn on the radio in the coach and it would crackle through the speaker system.
As you say, semi-final day has a flavour all of its own. And good afternoon to those of you at home, many of you. Some supporters have been delayed on the motorway. You may see a few empty spaces even at this stage, but we're expecting a crowd of 39,000, and they're giving the players quite a welcome.
So by the time we got to the ground, we'd already heard that Liverpool had scored.
lo and behold, not long into the first half, and Ian Rush puts Liverpool ahead.
McMahon intercepting. Rush going to the left now. Onside, Ian Rush. Liverpool take the lead. And Ian Rush, the ace goal scorer, once again makes it look so easy.
From me, I remember, still to this day, I remember the feeling of, thank God for that. Hallelujah. Not because I want to see Crystal Palace lose, but at last, the nervousness suddenly went. I literally had felt sick for, you know, 20 minutes before the game to up to that moment. At last, I didn't have to worry about it. The inevitability has happened. Liverpool has scored. I can just sit back now and enjoy singing along to Palace, but knowing that we're not going to get anything out of it. Here it was. It was done early. There was no late heartbreak to have.
When you look back on like the mid-80s, I mean, Liverpool were certainly the dominant side in the 80s. I was calculating the back. I mean, we were semi-final 86, managed to get to the final and win it. 88, we were semi-final again, get to the final, lose it. 89, we get to the like, semi-final again, get to the final, win it. You know, a semi-final occasion was something that wasn't unusual for Liverpool at that time. It was very much seemed as like the norm. Hi, I'm Gary Gillespie, ex-Liverpool, ex-Scotland, a player from the 1980s when we played Crystal Palace in the semi-final of the FA Cup. Going into the game, I think there's no question we were strong favourites to go through to the final, especially having played that game earlier on in the season. I think it was a September time, wasn't it, when we won that 9-0. Didn't take really anything for granted, to be quite honest with you. It wasn't the Liverpool way at that time. We knew how good we were. But, you know, as I say, pretty confident. But, you know, we were pretty confident about going into any match, regardless whether it be a semi-final or not.
4-1 against Crystal Palace to win this match with the odds. And they are, to say the least, the underdogs. And Liverpool, as Bob has said, are the holders and the favourites.
Didn't expect to lose, but sometimes, you know, what's for you won't go by you, and, you know, there's some destiny always in, like, the FA Cup that, you know, like, certain teams like Crystal Palace, the underdogs, they rise to the occasion, and that was certainly one of them on that day.
I don't think anybody gave us a chance.
I think Palace have only ever beaten Liverpool on one occasion in the last 18 meetings, back in 1971 at Selhurst Park. And they've lost twice to them this season, 2-0 at Palace, and of course the 9-0 at Anfield. So this semi-final, up to now, has gone according to the form book.
We'd learned from that Anfield lesson, you know, it was a tough lesson, but back then we knew we were a part of something special, and we just wanted to play our part. And the opportunity of taking a team to Wembley for the first time was huge. We had faith in each other as well. My name's Jeff Thomas. I captained the Crystal Palace side that beat Liverpool in the FA Cup semi-final at Villa Park. Yeah, it was a massive tactical game, especially the first half. Steve had set us up really to make it a dour 45 minutes. And he believed if we were still in the game after 45, we'd got a great chance. I always remember him saying a couple of days before the game, just saying, if we're 2-0 down at half-time, we're still in it. Some of their players are getting a little long in the tooth. You know, if we're still in that game, then let's go out and attack them. And that's where we found ourselves. So I don't think anybody envisaged John Pemberton doing what he did straight from the from the whistle, half-time whistle, but that really kicked it off.
At half-time, I remember very clearly having a chat with my brother and a couple of other people saying, this is quite good, it's only 1-0, it's reasonably respectable. And I remember when I interviewed Andy Gray about this, his view was, they said to each other in the dressing room, let's not get embarrassed, let's not lose 3 or 4-0. That was how high the expectations were. I'm Richard Foster, I'm a football writer and journalist, and I've been following Palace ever since 1969. So at half-time it was all thinking, yeah, this is going to be okay, we might get away with a 2-0, that looks okay. Then, obviously, the second half starts.
Well, let's see what Palace can do about it now in the second half as they attack the Holt End here at Villa Park. John Pemberton, a lovely run early on.
There's a very good story that Alan Smith told me when I interviewed him, is that they were still walking down the touchline when their game kicked off, and they suddenly saw John Pemberton haring past him, and Smith, in rich, fruity language, which I won't use on this podcast, said, "What is he doing?"
And a chance for Barber.
As I say, straight from the kickoff, I think Steve McMahon gave the ball away from our kickoff, and then you broke down the right hand side, and you know, get the ball into the box, and we kind of panicked a little bit.
And Benison, and it's a shot.
There was just something in that moment that when Pembo goes down the right-hand side and crosses that ball over, you just kind of felt, you know, the momentum was changing.
And it's there by Bright! It's Mark Bright, straight from the kick-off. After John Sulaco's shot didn't quite get there, Bright certainly did, and Palace are level. What a dramatic start to the second half, and Liverpool are stunned.
I've watched it many times, and the whole time that fell apart, it was just bouncing the place.
You know, I've celebrated a lot of Palace goals in my time. That was one of the best, because we just went absolutely crazy. It was the whole 10, you know, it was split half and half, and the heat was still bearing down on our heads, but we just went mad, because we'd scored against Liverpool. We thought, wow, this is it. This is the height of what we're going to do. We are drawing with Liverpool.
But I just remember Brighty scoring the first goal, and it just went mad. It was mayhem. I've never been in a crowd like it where it just went nuts. That's the only way I can describe it. And just being taken down rows and rows and rows of people, just because I couldn't put my feet on the floor to brace myself. My name's Mark Hone. I was a Crystal Palace defender between the years of 1984 and 1989. So on the day I was playing away at Merthyr Tydfil for Welling, I managed to speak to Paul Barron, who was a teammate of mine at Welling, who was obviously played for Palace as well, was a goalkeeper in the 80s. And he said, "Yeah, I can give you a lift back to Birmingham. I'll drive down to Merthyr Tydfil. We'll jump in the car, and I'll drive you all the way back up to Birmingham." Anyway, so played the game at Merthyr Tydfil, can't remember the score, but anyway, about 10 minutes to go, I'd gone in for a challenge with the goalkeeper, and as I've fallen, my knee was going forwards, but he hit me on my chest, and I went backwards. I tore my medial ligaments in my knee to shreds, basically. Somehow or other, I got bandaged up at the game. I was in absolute agony. I was given some crutches by Merthyr Tydfil, who looked after me, to be fair. They saying, "Look, you might have to go to hospital." And I'm thinking, I can't. I've got an FA Cup semi-final to go and watch tomorrow with all my schoolmates. I'm not missing out on this. After the game finished, you know, I hobbled to Paul's car, Barra's car, and he just said, "Are you sure you want to do this?" I said, "Yeah." I was in absolute agony because I couldn't move my right leg at all. My knee was absolutely in bits. Anyway, so I do remember Brighty scoring the first goal, and I remember the whole end. I literally, my feet didn't touch the ground because I couldn't hold myself. I literally couldn't hold myself because my knee was in bits. Honestly, it was literally, the crowd just took me probably 20 yards down the Holt End. It just was mayhem, absolute mayhem. And I remember coming to and thinking, "Well, where's all my mates gone?" And I'm having to look around anyway. I saw this hand appear about, I don't know, how many rows back up the Holt End. So I had to then hobble back up the Holt End through people to get back to my mates. Yeah, it's just an absolute emotional roller coaster.
And Palace are all right at the moment. It's their supporters who are celebrating with chants of Eagles, Eagles, which of course is the club nickname.
Then suddenly, about, you know, 10 minutes later, 15 minutes later, we go ahead.
Andy Gray has placed the ball. That's his cross. And Bright's there. O'Reilly's there! And Palace, are they in front? Yes, they are!
And that's when I started to think, this actually isn't real. I kept sort of prodding myself, saying, we can't be beating Liverpool. This is Liverpool, who are, you know, the best team in Europe, the best team in the world. We can't be doing this.
Liverpool stood there and could really not believe it. And Gary O'Reilly from the back found room in the penalty area. And it was a good goal, and it's 2-1 Palace.
It just felt an inevitability that this was going to be our time. But, you know, football does what football does, and it rips your heart apart.
Staunton to Venison. Right across the goal, McMahon! Oh, it's there! It's 2-2! Steve McMahon! As they used to say in Bill Shankly's time and since, you never rule Liverpool out. And with 10 minutes to go, it's all square again. But what a semi-final. What a football match. Beardsley. Oh, look at this. Staunton. Penalty. Pemberton on Staunton. George Courtney has pointed the spot. And Pemberton is distraught. Well, I'm not sure about that from here.
I was so wrapped up in the game, and I think a lot of us were, that we didn't even realise how long was left. We felt we were a bit hard done by. The penalty decision was one of them 50-50s, and John was obviously distraught.
And the cup holders could strengthen their grip on the trophy here. Barnes scores. The goalkeeper went the right way, but the kick was true in the corner. And Liverpool lead by 3-2. And from being 2-1 up, Palace are suddenly jumped on their backsides and can't really believe what's happened to them. Most of all, Pemberton.
And then when they equalised, it was this sort of feeling of, oh, OK, we've done all right, and then Barnes scores the penalty. Look, we've only lost 3-2. This is fine, this is good. You know, everyone's going to be saying, plucky Palace, we lost, but only just.
Just over 3 minutes, Liverpool 3, Crystal Palace 2. In one of the most exciting semi-finals, or certainly the second half, that I can remember.
To our right, their scarves are up singing You'll Never Walk Alone, and you can't believe that it's been taken away from you.
The emotions on the bench, well, they must feel they've been on a roller coaster ride over there.
I think you could sense it as well from the Liverpool supporters, that getting the lead with that like late stage, you know, it was very unlike Liverpool, like, to not see the game through at 83 minutes and being 3-2 up in a semi-final. It was very unlike Liverpool not to, like, see the game and manage the game and get the result.
Steve Coppell is standing. His team were 10 minutes away from Wembley, let it be said. They're now less than 3 minutes away from going out.
Well, I think we just felt we were still in it. You know, there was a few minutes left and we just thought, why not, let's just go for it. And nothing else to lose. Fate was on our side for sure.
Thomas, and Bright's in there.
That's where I say, like, sometimes the FA Cup, you know, what it's for you won't go by you. And Palace, certainly, it was their day and it was their time to shine.
And Thomas, Staunton, Gray, 3-3. Andy Gray for Palace, they're back in it.
And then, ridiculously, you know, we get the equaliser through Andy Gray. And that, again, was just so intense.
2 minutes to go. Liverpool 3, Crystal Palace 3. And this one is going down in semi-final folklore.
I'll point out now, it is the most exhausted I've ever been. Because you're up and down, up and down. You know, your emotions go up and down. And then you've got extra time. And I just went, how are we actually going to handle extra time?
We have got is extra time. I think Terry Venables and I are going to try and get our breath back.
Unfortunately, I got a groin strain and had to go off, as did Ian Rush earlier that as well. So we used our two substitutions pretty early.
Barry Venison is on at right back in place of Gary Gillespie. So Liverpool have now used both their substitutes at this comparatively early stage. Palace haven't used either of theirs yet.
We trained hard. Steve Coppell kept the foot on the pedal with our fitness. A lot of the teams were sort of winding down for the summer, but we were just going at it full pelt, so I think that helped.
I think one of the things that has been pointed out retrospectively, probably didn't realise at the time, is how fit that Palace team was. And they really put a massive focus on being fitter. It was Alan Smith he was sort of walking his dog, and he came across this huge, massive hill near his house. And he said, oh, this is a good idea. So they actually used to train up and down this hill.
Farthing Downs, we used to go in the minibus. Steve was a fit guy. He used to lead the running. Farthing Downs is a steep grass ski slope or something. And he just used to have us running up and down there. And, you know, there was plenty of stories where a few of the players used to end up in the bushes being violently sick because it was so hard, so tough. And I remember Andy Gray visiting the bushes a few times. But, yeah, that put us in good shape for the game.
But Jeb Thomas is having a good match in midfield, number 8. Really leading the side well.
And extra time was just felt like it was ours. It just felt like the Palace fans believed and the Liverpool fans didn't and the Palace players believed.
It was pure exhaustion. I mean, I'd never experienced a game like that. And I'm not sure how many around me had. My name is Mark Williams. I've been supporting Crystal Palace for 48 years. I think everyone was just shattered. And I just remember, you know, people around me are just on their haunches and the grown men crying, as I said. I've never seen that before. People were just absolutely shattered from it all. And then we thought, what's happening now? What's going to go on? We've got extra time. We've never seen extra time. What, you know, how's this going to play out? It was fairly uneventful, that extra time, and until... chaos. I can't describe it any other way as chaos.
I almost think I was so exhausted I couldn't really celebrate, and it was so surreal that you just thought, oh God.
And it's back with the underdog again.
Just absolutely cuddling and kissing anybody, and there were tears absolutely everywhere.
There was quite a number of Liverpool fans in our section. You saw that when Ian Rush scored the first goal. By the end of the game, the Palace fans had just taken over all that area. It was our day.
There's a minute to go at Villa Park. Crystal Palace are that close to Wembley, to putting out the holders and the favourites, Liverpool, to destroying the dream of the double. Can they hold on?
I was down the other end, celebrating behind my camera, just thinking, I just can't believe what's happened here. My name is Tom Jenkins, and I'm a sports photographer for The Guardian and The Observer newspapers.
Crystal Palace 4, Liverpool 3, and Crystal Palace are at Wembley. They've beaten Liverpool, whose dream of the double is destroyed, in one of the most amazing matches, surely, in the recent history of the FA Cup.
Back in those days, we were allowed to run on the pitch. You know, I picked up my bag and cameras and just ran on the pitch. I think I was a bit delirious, to be honest with you. I was just going around like a headless chicken because I didn't know really what to do. I'd not really been in that situation before. Part of me is thinking, oh my God, Palace have just beaten Liverpool and they're in the FA Cup final. Part of me is thinking, I have actually got to take some pictures here. I have got to try and be professional. And I remember running over to John Slarko saying, John Slarko, I was in your team. I was in your team as a kid. Obviously, he didn't hear me and he was like running around all over the place. And I was just sort of, wherever the Palace players went, I just ran with them. Partly in joy, partly to actually take some pictures. It was crazy. It was crazy.
It was completely surreal. I mean, when the whistle went, you think, wow, we've done it. We've actually beaten them.
It was just tears. It was just absolutely tears. You know, as the final whistle went and the players ran over to the whole pen, it was far less jumping and cuddling. It was the full emotion of Little Crystal Palace sort of beating Liverpool, you know, we're off to Wembley. And then it was definitely one of absolute exhaustion.
I never forget, right at the end, now by this point we'd managed to get ourselves down to the front. The Liverpool fans have gone on from their end. And there's an old lady next to me. She's got one of those kind of red and blue knitted hats that only the old lady's got, you know, the kind of tea cosy hat. And she's crying her eyes out. She's crying her eyes out. And this policeman came up to us and he said, like, you've really got to go home now, folks. You've really got to go home now. And she said, I'm going absolutely nowhere, young man. I'm staying here. And I presume to this day she's still at the front of the halting because, you know, she waited a lot longer than I had for that sort of moment.
I'd wished I'd stayed on the pitch a lot longer. Those moments don't happen many times in your career, and I always remember coming off the pitch, and our kit man Spike, a lifelong Crystal Palace fan, was just in tears on the kit box, you know, and that just brought it home as well, what it meant. I had great mates in the stand as well, Palace fans for years, and they were just all in tears as well. It meant an awful lot to them, and it meant an awful lot to the players, you know. Getting to Wembley is special, very special.
And when we came out of the ground, I just remember this slide. It just didn't seem real. It really felt as though this wasn't happening. It was in another universe, and we'll go back to reality and we'll get hammered 3-0.
The realities of it were broken. I think probably for different people at different times. For me, it was when we pulled into the first services on the motorway on the way back. And there must have been 5,000 Palace fans in the services, and it was a full-on carnival. There were people stood on the canopy of the roof of the services. Everybody was singing, people just cuddling everybody randomly. And actually, we celebrated far more the victory in the motorway services than we actually did after the game. You know, it was you couldn't quite take it in at the stadium, and you was probably far too emotional. By the time you'd got in the car and you had 20 minutes, 30 minutes underneath your belt, you just couldn't believe it.
I've worked for The Guardian ever since. I've been to every World Cup since 1994. I think 5 Olympic Games. I've been incredibly lucky. You know, I just look back at it now and think, what an amazing game. What a privilege it was to be there. You know, I've done some amazing games. You know, I was at Istanbul for the Liverpool comeback, the AC Milan. That was pretty amazing. But that game at Villa Park is right up there at the top. Probably because I have emotional investment in it, but also it just was the most incredible game of football.
I've been to over 1,000 Palace games in my time. That remains the greatest game I have ever been to. For the drama, the excitement and the lack of expectation, this game will be almost impossible to beat.
The FA Cup is always about David against Goliath, isn't it? When the underdogs win, it always seems to be a special occasion. You know, I think just the way that the goals fell and the timings that they did, I think adds a little bit special to it.
It was an incredible day. I know lots of people ask about, you know, is that their favourite game? You know, in my time of watching Palace, that's the most monumental moment for me.
In terms of drama, it will never be matched. For me, as a 16-year-old, going to my second match outside of Selhurst, it was eye-popping. I'll never get over it. I'll never get over the occasion. I'll never get over the drama. I'd like to think that every Palace supporter that was there that day would feel the same.
One of the newspapers said it was best TV since man landed on the moon, and I don't know if it's best TV, but to be in the stadium, it's still a game that I've, you know, just the best I've ever been at, that's for certain.
It just felt like we were part of something special. Watching all the pundits not give us a chance, and then Malcolm Allison at half-time was probably the only one that dared say that we were still in the game. It felt like you were an opportunity of making history. That's what we've done, and I think that's why I think that team and that squad is held in high esteem with the club even now. It was a magical day for players and fans and everybody attached with the football club.
This podcast was brought to you by Stirs, the world's first zero-waste coffee.